Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Painting the Stream. I am one of your hosts of this here podcast. My name is Dan Reichert. Sitting across the table from me, kind of. Catacorner this time for the first time. My wife, Bianca Reichert. How are you doing, honey?
I'm your wife, and I'm also the co-host of this podcast.
These are all true statements. So far.
Just so you know, my identity is inexplicably tied to the fact that I'm a wife.
It is true.
You're a host of a podcast. First and foremost.
You've got a hell of a career in your own right. You're your own human being.
That's
not
right.
Just tied to a podcast at all. None of us are.
We do have our lives outside of this.
Yes. Me, you, and also our guest, Tom Monda.
Howdy.
That's my brother, Tom. We have the same parents, both of us. We have similar genetic material.
That's true. I don't really want to think about that.
We don't have to.
We don't. We can think about how, theme song that the folks just heard at home, you wrote that.
I did.
You made that.
Written and performed by you.
I did. Thank you for involving me.
Of course. Listeners might also recognize him from the progressive rock American band.
Hot rock American icon.
They're an American band. They're coming to your town.
Yes.
We'll talk about their new album in a little bit, but first we want to get into Miami Connection.
Yes. So this is a feature film that was not really on my radar until, Tom, you brought it up several times, and I think you pitched it to me as, I think you said it was... You mentioned motorcycle ninjas and cocaine.
Yeah. It's one of my all-time favorite bad movies, I would say.
Yeah, you've been telling me about this one for a while, and I've been reluctant to watch it.
But. When you find a bad movie that's able to sort of straddle that line where it's so bad it's just enjoyable, and they're not like winking at the camera in the process,
right.
They're really
they're selling.
There's a lot of heart behind it, and they really believe what they're doing, but they're just not rising to the occasion.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Is like any movie that like winks at the camera too much, or like knows it's in on the joke or whatever. It's cringy. Yeah, it's like that's not what you want. This is from '87, which I would say is like ground zero of this type of entertainment.
Oh yeah, yeah. They were pumping out these type of movies.
Yeah, but so I love like '80s bad action movies and everything. But a lot of those are even like you know big budget Schwarzenegger movies that are cheesy.
Yeah.
Even like Commando is one of my favorite movies ever. But that had a budget and that was. Yeah, Commander was incredible. It had a big director attached to it, and it had a big theatrical release. This one is this, like, F-tier, bad 80s action movie, which, Bianca, so a little bit of context before we go into the movie. You know some stuff about the actual, like, production of this film.
Yeah.
And I've researched it as well.
Yeah.
So two scholars.
I know two scholars, if you will.
Yes.
Yeah, this movie is the baby of Y.K. Kim, who is a taekwondo master?
Yes.
Or taekwondo.
Taekwondo.
As they say in the movie.
Apparently, he was on a talk show in 1985, and this film director, Richard Park, saw him and I guess was immediately infatuated with the idea of YK Kim starring in his own action movie. And for better or worse, Park convinced Kim to make a movie, convinced him that he was capable of being the star, that, you know, stardom, it was just a matter of him, you know, making this film.
And it was totally independently funded by him.
By his fortune.
Yeah. He had amassed a lot of money from being a motivational speaker and taekwondo coach.
Right. And it's, you know, a little misguided on Richard Park's part to maybe falsely encourage this YK Kim guy that he's capable of being the star because, I mean, obviously now he's done well for himself. But, I mean, at the time he never made a film before. So he had to borrow money from friends. He took out loans. He spent all of his savings. He mortgaged his taekwondo school all to finance this movie. And after it was, you know, produced, hundreds of distribution studios rejected it. And he was obviously very discouraged.
So they saw the final cut. It wasn't like he pitched the idea and they turned it down. They saw the film and were like, oh, God, no, we cannot put our name or our company on this.
And it was not to jump the gun, but it was eventually pretty much shelved, right, for years.
Yeah.
It never really saw the light of day.
Right, until this developer at Alamo Drafthouse.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it was the Austin-based. They made like a pictures production, or like Drafthouse Pictures.
Yeah, they have their own distribution wing. And
okay.
He saw this movie on eBay and made a blind bid for $50. He didn't see it. He didn't know anything about it. And then he watched it and was obviously amazed, gobsmacked, if you will. And after a few screenings at Alamo Drafthouse, the reception was really positive, so they decided to re-release it under the Alamo Drafthouse distribution wing.
It feels like it's the perfect time for them to bring it back, because, like, in its day, it probably just seemed like an absolutely terrible mm-hmm. action movie. But obviously there's a certain, like, ironic joy a lot of people get in bad 80s movies. And, like, 2012 at an Alamo Drafthouse, that sounds like the exact way to reintroduce this, like, horrible
yeah.
movie.
Yeah.
There is a lot of charm to this movie, though. Like, Even if you're not an appreciator of bad movies,
right?
There's something charming about Miami Connection that you can't quite put your finger on. Like, it's as opposed to like a movie like Deadly Prey or what's the one that you introduced me to with the frisbee death scene on the beach,
Hard Ticket to Hawaii. Oh,
something
yeah.
like that. That's very painful to watch. Yeah. Miami Connection kind of like keeps you invested in it for whatever reason. There's something about it, at least for me, where I'm like. This is sort of transcendent bad and, like, come around the other side in some
It's the kind of bad movie that makes you feel good while you're watching it.
Yeah. So I have to ask, though, YK Kim, right? Mm-hmm. That's the main guy. Mm-hmm. And so he's the star. He's, like, the main kind of, like, ass-kicker of the movie.
Right.
Yeah, sorry, writer, director. How old was he when this was made?
He was in his 40s when this
Okay, because he looks like he's in his 40s, but he's a college student yes. in this film.
He's a college student.
Central Florida.
Who sort of, to me, looks like... a Ninja Turtle? Like a very pale Ninja Turtle? He's got like a very unique look to him.
He does have a unique look and a beautiful way of speaking the English language.
Well, that's the thing is, so he has a very, very heavy accent. And
yes.
so a lot of the times on close-ups, it is clearly him talking. Mm-hmm. And you yeah. know, you can, for the most part, tell what he's saying. But there are like wide shots where it is just the worst dubbed thing. And it sounds like a different voice.
Sure, yeah.
So they couldn't quite decide how to really, like they wanted him in it for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, some of my favorite moments in the film were it was... you know, dialogue that YK Kim obviously wrote because you can hear, like, his choice
yes.
of words in the other characters. And they're, you could tell that they're, like, just trying their best to, like, honor what YK Kim wrote in the script.
Yeah.
At their own peril, obviously. But those are some of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Well, some of my favorites are when, out of nowhere, a character will just start doing, like, a long monologue about their past or their family or something. And it's mm-hmm. not really brought up again. Like, it's either just, like, karate fights
yeah.
or here's one scene where, like, these people are walking through campus and talking about their entire family
history. Yeah, yeah. It strikes me as a movie where maybe the script wasn't complete while they were filming, so they were just trying to throw stuff against the wall to kind of see what would stick
yeah.
and what they could like run with, because there definitely are a lot of loose ends that are just like
yes.
quickly abandoned with no resolution.
We'll get to it when we go through the plot here, but like early on there was this big thing that we thought for sure would never be brought up again, mm-hmm. and then actually it did totally come back at the end of the movie. But I guess let's get into just running down, like, it's not gonna take a long time to run down the plot
yeah.
of this
mm-hmm.
movie here. So I instantly realized there's that first action scene
right.
Where it's like, you know, it's just basic 80s on a dock, just a bunch of dopes with guns standing
yeah.
around doing a drug
It's a
deal.
killer action scene.
It is.
That's the arm gets cut off.
Yes.
Beautiful.
There's some ninja stealth kills going on.
Yeah.
But it's instantly one of those movies where it's fun to watch, like, background characters. Mm-hmm. Just, it's a lot of mustaches and sunglasses and dudes, like, looking
sure,
around with
yeah,
guns
yeah,
and
yeah.
really trying to sell it.
They definitely had a type when they were casting this movie. Yeah.
Yes.
It was they presented this movie really strangely. And frankly, throughout the whole movie, I was kind of lost plot-wise what was going on. And it started with that very first scene, because they had these, obviously, these bad drug dealers. No one's ever rooting for the drug dealers mm-hmm. in the movie. And then these ninjas on motorcycles come along
mm-hmm.
and start killing everyone. So in my mind, I was thinking, oh, these ninjas on motorcycles must be the good guys.
Well, because they seem super cool. They're
they
ninjas
seem
on motorcycles.
Really cool. I was all for it. And then I guess they're the bad guys?
Everyone is a bad guy, except for Dragon Sound.
Except for Dragon Sound.
We're going to meet Dragon Sound soon, but they are a cool
yeah.
band. I mean, Tom, so you must... Look, you're in the music business.
Yeah,
thank you, scientist.
Yeah, yeah.
So how accurate of a portrayal of just kind of the tour... Well, actually, I don't know if they're really touring. It
no,
seems like every concert...
No, they work at this nightclub.
They work
right.
at... They have a regular gig at a nightclub.
Okay.
I would say, from my experience, it's all very true.
Okay.
Very true.
But you don't ride the motorcycles, right?
I don't.
Okay.
At this point in my career, I have people ride me on the motorcycle.
Okay, yeah. When you hear a motorcycle engine, does something like, do you wake up in a cold sweat because you think they're coming to grab your cocaine and money?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, of course.
Understandably.
Of course.
So, Tom, I took some notes on Dragon Sound's, the first performance that we see in the film
oh,
by
yeah.
Dragon Sound.
Mm-hmm.
And The keyboard player was shirtless. The bassist was shirtless. The front man was shirtless.
Mm-hmm.
There was a woman just standing there moving around. Did you mm-hmm. ever consider implementing these, you know, taking a cue from Dragon Sound and maybe going shirtless and having a token woman standing there?
I mean, 100%. I mean, I think a lot of bands can learn from the Dragon Force sound, the mm-hmm. Dragon Force image.
Well, Dragon Force is a progressive metal
Excuse
band.
Excuse me. Yes. Dragon Sound.
Isn't Dragon Force the band that That's had their historically difficult Guitar Hero song?
Yes, yes.
Through the Fire and Flames, yeah. Is that right?
I don't know why. Yeah.
So there's a very late title screen after Ninja Murder Party there. Mm-hmm. When the guy gets his arm cut off, there's a really good long take of the guy's face staring at his arm being cut off. Yeah, I appreciate that. So super late Beautiful title shot. Screen. And so that whole first thing is ninjas rolling into the night and stealing mm-hmm. the cocaine. And then we cut to Dragon Sound doing their performance, which we always see the entire song. Mm-hmm. It's never just
now,
like...
You have to jog my memory again. The first song that Dragon Sound plays, is it
Friendship, Honesty, Loyalty,
Integrity,
Be Together Through Thick and Thin.
It's that one? That's the first one?
Friends forever, we'll be together, we're on top, because we play to win. You've got a friend in me. When times get tough, you'll see.
Mm-hmm. And then they go, Taekwondo,
well,
right?
I don't think I caught that part. probably did. I don't think I noticed
Here's
that.
The thing, and this is a trend that, this is the first scene that does it, and it's a trend throughout the movie. They stay on something way too long.
Yes.
Like, whether it's, like, those bee footage of people on the beach, they give, like, a like 10 minutes to each Dragon Song sound.
And well, and the beach scene, looking at through like, a Me Too 2019 lens is awful.
It ain't great.
It sucks.
It's it didn't age well, we'll say that.
They shove a guy onto, like, a pile of beach babes, and then it's, like, a five-minute, like, slap fight.
Yeah, of him rolling on top of these poor women.
Yeah.
Yelling lewd things out of a truck. And,
yes.
And these are the only good guys in the story.
These are the protagonists of
the
story.
These are the protagonists of the story,
that are just catcalling every woman on the beach.
It's a little nauseating. And I have a funny story that maybe I should save for the end.
No, go for it.
But I met the guy who looks like John Oates.
Oh, really?
At NAMM.
Really?
Did I tell you this? The guy, the guitar player.
Yeah.
And the one that gets kidnapped at the end, right?
No. Does he get kidnapped?
Yes, he does. He's
the one he does get kidnapped. Yeah. Yes. So, that's the one I met. He wrote all the music. I met him at NAMM. I was demoing guitars. And he walked over, and he looks vaguely the same.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't have recognized him, but I recognized the name because everybody wears name tags.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like, are you the Dragon Sound guy? And he totally was, and he was blown away that, like, I knew, because he was just watching the performance, and he was blown, and I got a picture with him and everything, and he's wearing a bedazzled cowboy hat.
Nice.
Wait, was this in real life? Or
this is real life.
Oh, okay.
This is not, like, a hallucination?
Well, no, I couldn't remember if he did that in the movie or not.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he was wearing, in real life, a bedazzled cowboy hat, and he was a delight. He was so nice, and
That's
he
awesome.
Was so shocked that, I recognize him from that movie. He called his partner, whoever was with him, over, and he's like, oh my god, he recognized me from the movie.
Oh,
that's
wow.
awesome. I'm sure YK Kim probably gets all the recognition for that one.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I don't even know the other actors' names in the movie. Like,
no.
Yeah, his name was Angelo something. His last name escapes me now. But
yeah, I definitely did
I have a picture.
Oh, you do?
Oh, wow.
I have a picture with him, and I'll send it to you.
Oh,
yeah, you have to send
great.
It to us so we could, when we tweet it out. We'll...
Yes.
yeah. If you could find him on social media, tag him.
So,
he was a super nice guy.
So a lot of the songs here are, like, very literal, because I think in the first song, they are, like, some of the lyrics were about ninjas stealing cocaine and, like, writing on.
No,
yeah, I don't
like,
know who's
song.
Relating to the Dragon Sound.
Yeah, I was
thing,
thinking,
you
like,
know,
the first
it's
song,
very niche.
The first song we see them perform is about friendship, and the crowd at the nightclub was obviously super into it, super positive crowd. And then the next, I think the next day, we see them perform this very specific song about ninjas and drugs.
Against
and
the ninja?
Against
yes.
the ninja.
Oh my god.
And
yes.
the crowd was still
That's
really into
one.
It. Frankly, if I was in that audience, I'd be a little confused because the last song was about friendship. I think most people can relate to it. This is about something very specific.
You jump right into an anti-ninja song after a friendship song. It's going to confuse your audience. It's very polarizing.
Yes. Yeah. Also, everyone in this movie that is not the good guys is basically just a Streets of Rage villain.
Yeah, 100%. Just like a faceless
sunglasses,
drone,
cigarettes.
Leisure suit. Yeah,
a lot of bandanas and just like tough guys with like, you know, sleeveless shirts and stuff.
Yeah, there's not much character development in the villain side of things. I mean, they definitely tried to develop some sort of like, I don't know, I got like a bit of a Saved by the Bell sort of vibe with the gang.
Yeah.
The Dragon Sound gang. Maybe it kind of reminded me of the Zack Attack episode of Saved by the Bell in certain ways.
Yeah.
Um, But the villains are just so one-dimensional. I mean, there's the main villain who sort of looks like a Manda.
Right. Yeah, I thought he was like a lost Manda uncle. Yeah. Jeff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, who's
and that's Jane's brother.
Jane's brother.
And despite him paying for her entire college education, she really resents him, and it's never clear why that's the case.
Uh-huh. But he doesn't want him to hang out with Michael Phelps, the guy who...
Right.
If you watch the movie, you'll know exactly who I'm talking
about.
Yeah. But the guy who vaguely resembles Michael Phelps, for some reason he's a bad seed... Even though he seems rather wholesome.
Well, he met him like very wholesome.
Like 2 seconds after he meets him, he punches him in the face. So we go from Ninja Death.
To be fair, that's what I did to Dan.
That's true. And, but hey, you know, you mend fences and everything. Now we're making a podcast together. So it goes from like ninja stealth death doc action scene to music scene where we play the whole song to cut to like a college computer lab, basically. Yeah. And that's where Michael Phelps, let's just for the sake of, we'll call him Michael
for
Phelps.
For continuity, yeah.
Yes. They're walking through campus and with Jane, right? And so Jane, this is when Jane, like he asked like one question.
Yeah, it was such a like regular making conversation question where he's just like, so tell me about your family. Like the most base level first date question. And I'm sure he really regretted asking that because she just takes a deep dive on how she doesn't like her brother. Her parents are all dead. It was this very heavy question for her. And I don't know. That probably would have, you know, made him a little nervous going forward, I would think. But he still seems whole hog on Jane. And
well, he's got the backing of Dragon Sound. He feels pretty confident. Like, they do show up at some point here, and it's clear there's going to be trouble between Dragon Sound and Jeff. And his faction is kind of just this gang of street toughs, basically. So we've got Motorcycle Ninjas, Dragon Sound, and Jeff and the Street Toughs.
And I'm not sure what their allegiance really is, and it doesn't really specify. There's also, like... the just straight up bikers, the non ninja bikers.
Right.
Yeah.
Who appear later in the film.
Right.
Who appear to be friends with Jeff, yet their relationship to the ninjas. It's very unclear.
And then there's another evil faction, the band that Dragon Sound replaced at the nightclub.
That's the next scene after this weird brother conflict thing, is that it's like two concert promoters, and they're yelling at each other, and I'm trying to follow this thing. I couldn't quite do it. And then all of a sudden, everyone's karate fighting.
Everybody knows karate in this movie. Yes. Just like we should stop, pause the conversation for a second.
Yeah.
Every character... knows karate.
Concert promoters. I'm sure Jane does a judo flip at some point.
Yeah, like, and every character will erupt in some sort of taekwondo battle at some point.
It's pretty clear that the cast of this movie is probably just YK Kim students at his time.
And they actually were, a lot of the main characters.
It felt like a local karate class that like entered a film festival.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we've got cameras. This guy knows how to edit video. Let's do it.
You got to give it to YK Kim, though, for like... instead of just committing, like, I'm going to make a kung fu movie, he's like, I'm going to make every kind of movie in one movie. You know, like, he took, like, everything that was going on in Hollywood and sort of just mushed it together in this stew.
There's Death Star trench run at some point. It's great. So they cut to another song after this. This is the Against the Ninjas song.
10-minute song, 3 lyrics, I think, in the whole song. Oh, my God. They just repeat over 10 minutes.
I remember they started it, and I think we looked at each other, and we're like, are they going to do this whole fucking song again? And it's like, sure enough, it's the whole thing.
They paid for the song. They're going to use the whole thing.
Well, it felt like... so this movie is like an hour 26 or something, and I feel like they just had to pat it out at some point, or they were just really proud of the songs.
Definitely. I wonder how much of the movie was left on the cutting room floor, or if they used everything. Mm-hmm. I honestly wonder like what they did to kind of like try to make a cohesive thing out of this. I'd be curious to see like, you know, if they have any deleted scenes, but I've yet to find anything, you know, online or anything like that.
It feels like a concert film with like sketches in between, like that Zeppelin song Remains the Same, where it's like, hey, they're gonna do a song, and then it's like, here's some weird shit going on. I don't know what the context was, but at some point here, after the Against the Ninja song, some dude tries to hop into a convertible and just biffs it, like, super noticeably.
That's the dude that I met.
Oh, that's your guy?
Yeah,
okay. Did he bring that up with him?
I did not bring that up, but that's, like, a super memorable scene, because that would have been just a quick recut.
Yeah, hey, Bill, can you do that?
Let's give that one more shot. Like,
you almost made me.
Yeah,
try
he
to play
totally
it off.
Blows it. I mean, there's so many... scenes like that in this movie, like especially YK Kim when he has his big monologues, and he just butchers them, and they just like keep on going. I mean, I give him credit; they just let him go.
Yeah.
Hey, film stock's expensive back then. Yeah, they weren't shooting on digital,
I guess so. I mean,
so Dragon Sound's driving around in a car at some point, and they encounter one of these weird roving Mad Max gangs of street toughs. Not sure who they're with, but there's a, this is when the guy just pours beer all over the band the car.
So and they have like a West Side Story-esque rumble in the streets.
Yeah. Believe it or not, they start karate fighting. Mm-hmm. And so they're in like the middle of an intersection in downtown Miami, and everyone's got just like chains and everything, and like no one's coming up. We don't see pedestrians scurrying away. There's no cops coming or anything. And I just don't even know what is this even all heading towards or anything. And I don't think anything, right?
Yeah, no, I was really confused. Was this Jeff's gang? Was this the band's gang?
This was the band.
The band's gang.
Now, like, from the band's perspective, this other band just got into a fight with the booking agent at this club, got into a karate battle with him. If they beat up Dragon Sound, do they think they would get the gig back?
Is that how the music industry works?
I don't know. Maybe I've been doing it all wrong these years, but...
How much karate do you know?
Yeah, I have to bone up on my karate, but their motives are very confusing, but that's a really good drawn-out fight scene.
We'll take a break from the karate after this.
Let me just say real quick, the fights in these movies, obviously these guys are skilled martial artists, but...
Yeah, the fight scenes aren't bad. The fight choreography is not bad.
They're not bad, but I feel like when you're watching a movie that's especially a very martial arts-centric movie, there's a certain expectation that the fights are going to be, like, otherworldly good. And maybe we're spoiled because of, like, The Raid and all those
kinds of movies.
And the John
Wicks and stuff, yeah.
But, like... This is, like, really good fighting, but it's not, like, movie good fighting.
It's all extremely choreographed, where, like, everything's like, okay, here's the part where I block this, and here's the part where I flip you.
And YK Kim has this thing that he does that really made me uncomfortable, where he would grab someone's face with his foot, and then just hold on to it.
I don't like
just
that.
Hold on to
there's also the fist in the mouth thing, where
you
just kind of hold
there's a
fist.
Fetish element about that shot or something that I don't appreciate.
They linger on it.
Yeah, they linger on it way too long. That's a very uncomfortable move, and it happens more than once.
Yeah. I actually read that that's a move that he... I was reading his AMA on Reddit, and he said that he invented that move, so maybe that's why he wanted to...
Just holding your fist in someone's mouth?
No, the foot grab.
Oh.
Thing, grabbing someone's nose.
Yeah, when he
foot.
Grabs the guy's nose.
Oh, jeez.
And he does it on stage in concert.
Concert?
Oh, yeah, there is that.
Oh,
the concert scene.
When they're, like, playing around, though,
yeah,
it's like
yeah.
a friendly
grabs
nose
a keyboard player.
Yeah. After this is the orphan scene, right? Where we learn about...
Yeah, so this is when we get a serious emotional scene here, where Jim, so he's a guy in the band, and he has a photo of his father. They're all hanging out at Jim's apartment. Mm-hmm. And, like, the band gets mad because I guess they were all supposed to be orphans?
Wait a minute. Oh, you missed a really good part.
Okay.
So, it's Jim, right?
Jim, yeah.
He gets a letter in the mail.
Yeah.
And the one kid won't give him the letter, and they, like, play fight for, like... Way too long
But they play fight barely clothed.
Yeah.
And they all live in this house together and all sleep, I think, in the same room together. It's a
40-year-old college students.
Yeah. It's a very, very bizarre setup.
So ultimately he gets the letter in his hands, and of course the entire household surrounds him to open the letter because, I mean, we all live with roommates. That's what happens when you get a letter in the mail. The meeting is in session, and he reveals that he actually knows who his father is, and they're all kind of upset about that because they were under the impression that they were all orphans.
So yeah,
orphans.
Orphans.
Yeah, orphan college students in a band together.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I guess Jim's dad was in the military or something and left him. So he's like, okay, maybe I'm not technically an orphan, but like my dad left me and I feel bad about it. So we can.
Yeah. After his mom got sick and died, and then his father just disappeared. So I would think he would harbor a lot of resentment toward his father, but instead he actually wants to find him and reconcile with him.
Yeah, and this was the thing during this long speech, just unbroken scene of him talking about his father. Bianca and I were like, this is never coming up again, is it? And hey, YK Kim, you know, he's got some tricks up his sleeve.
And I mean, that scene is just one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie. I mean, you could tell the actor was really going for it.
Oh,
yeah, this is going to be my big break.
This was his moment.
Yeah, he was like, this is it. Like, I'm going to get some serious gigs after this. Mm-hmm. And it is just the absolute best. It's the absolute best. You can't... I would love to describe it to people, but they should just look it up, too.
Yeah, it's a very
Or maybe
jarring.
You can insert a little clip of the monologue.
I didn't know you had a father. I thought we are all orphans.
My mother was Korean. And my father was Black American. She gave me this picture when she was real sick. I was only 9 years old. They say that they loved each other and they were real loyal. We were real happy. But then when he finished military duty, he left. And we never saw him again. She told me to find him. But I didn't like him because he left us. But I knew one day when I grew up, I'd find him. Whether he was dead or alive.
It's a jarring scene to happen in between all this fighting and stuff. And after this, we get that really long B footage of the beach. Jane and John, a.k.a. Michael Fucks. They're kissing on the beach. And I gotta say, this is one of the worst looking movie kisses that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Because Michael Phelps was literally just smushing his face against Jane's face.
And like rotating it slightly back and forth. Yeah.
It was clear that like he really didn't want to, maybe he didn't want to kiss her because he didn't know her, who knows. Mm-hmm. He was not doing that well. It did not look pleasant for either of them.
That could have been his first kiss. It was almost, it was like the Pen 15 kiss where he's just like darting his tongue in and out of her mouth.
Yeah.
It was worse than that because he didn't open his mouth.
It was like he was fertilizing her with alien eggs.
So we cut to this gymnasium where all the ninjas train or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so the jerk brother, what's his name? Jeff?
Jeff
confronts the record execs.
Jeff Monda, we'll call him.
Yeah, Jeff Monda confronts them. And evil record exec says, and I think I wrote this down verbatim, they're all black belts in Taekwondo and they're pretty bad. Which is some real, like, are you a bad enough dude to rescue the president dialogue.
It's
incredible. And then, we kept the karate training. That's when we see a bunch of the fetish, pinchy mouth shots and everything.
That goes on for a really long time.
And then,
way too long.
Is this when they have the knife fight on the college campus?
I don't think that happens just yet. That comes up.
There's a couple of those montages where,
Well, they cut to, it's just something, the visual joke here of just like a bunch of ninjas and geese just sitting around a bench drinking Pepsi.
Oh, yeah.
The drink of ninjas worldwide.
Yeah. Oh, this is one of my favorite scenes when they're talking about the world tour.
Yes, this is when they want to go to Europe.
So,
yes.
I appreciate YK Kim's effort to make Dragon Sound sort of a League of Nations, if you will.
Yes.
You know, having everybody represented. I think that's admirable of him to try to do that, but the way they force it on you and they really like hammer the point home to make sure you're aware of it is so funny. And so they have their one gig at this club, and the guy, the Israeli member of Dragon Sound, is like, we should do a world tour and we could play where all of our families came from.
Yeah.
And it's
an easy thing to just do, right?
Yeah. Sure.
I want to go on a world tour. Yeah. All right.
You can leave for Switzerland tomorrow and play a gig there,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. We have our one gig in Florida. We'll be fine.
Oh, well, they have the one guy, like, he doesn't really get any dialogue in the rest of the movie, but he talks a lot in this scene. Mm-hmm. And it's the most stilted, like, I'd love to help you write that song, John. The worst dialogue.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
And then here's a scene that I don't remember if this has anything to do with the rest of the movie, but there's a restaurant and there's this new karate chef character I don't remember coming up
before. Oh my god, that's one of the best scenes.
But what happens? So these jerks like dine and dash, and then this like friendly, you know, like the chef or whatever, karate fights them, and I don't remember, did this have anything to do with anything?
It had nothing to do with anything, but apparently like they gave you the impression that the chef is like a mentor and friend to these guys, like... This restaurant is sort of like the Max, to bring back the Saved by the Bell sort of parallel.
Mm-hmm.
But that scene is notable, you know, for at least the short shorts, which are the shortest shorts I've ever seen on that one villain.
I don't think I noticed that.
Where you could straight up see scrotal cleavage.
Really?
It's so low. When I first saw it, I had to rewind it because I'm like, this is just crazy. This is crazy.
I think the MPAA must have missed that one.
Yeah.
It's rating.
It's wild.
Is this rated R or is this rated, they don't really cuss a lot. I mean, the violence is, it's bloody, but.
They have enough to justify an R rating, I think, because they have a little nudity.
Yeah, like a dismemberment, you know,
But they don't rate all the movies, right? Don't they only rate ones that get, like, wide distribution?
I think anything that gets, like, a theatrical release, which this went out in, like, 8 theaters in Orlando or something, so maybe this snuck under the radar. Mm-hmm. It's possible.
Yeah. I would say PG-13 for this.
I could see them getting away, especially now.
Doesn't nudity automatically bump you to an R?
Are you talking about the scrotal nudity?
Not the scrotal nudity. There's
some
breasts.
There's breasts
in the biker scene.
Oh, yeah, when they're showing the crazy biker party.
And it seemed like that they were just like, YK Cam's like, well, let's try to get some boobs in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they
okay.
just threw in some boobs just to, as, you know, whatever pad for the movie.
Not quite on a hard ticket to Hawaii level. Because
no,
hard ticket
no,
is
no.
like,
hard
hey,
ticket is, it shoves it in your face.
Any chance we can get. So we go to another one of those just action areas where it's just a port with a bunch of bad dudes sitting around taping up their wrists and sharpening knives. They're doing knife tricks and sitting on loading pallets, you know, just natural bad guy stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is when we meet this weird, like, Kid Rock looking dude that hangs out with the bad guy. And he talks constantly, and I don't think I understood a word he said.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah, it's just weird mumbling.
I thought he was speaking another language until I, like, made out one word, and I was like...
But they let him talk.
He looks like a mousy, like, rat version of Kid Rock.
Yeah, like a mousier, rattier version of Kid Rock.
And that's the other thing about Miami Connection is that the dialogue is so strange and stilted and disjointed that, like, it's disorienting and surreal to watch. And sometimes even the characters that are speaking English, like, it doesn't even register with you as English.
Yeah.
Because the thoughts aren't really coherent to begin with.
It's almost it's like an AI wrote this.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is when we get the song, Messing with the Tough Guys.
Tough Guys! Yeah.
That's a great track.
That's a great track.
Which is very much a montage of, like, oh, look at these crazy tough biker guys. Yeah, whatever. So that's when we get a lot of boobs and beer and motorcycles and stuff.
That's their quintessential 80s montage, the Tough Guys
scene. Yeah. My note for the scene is nothing of consequence happens, which I feel like I could have copied and pasted for a
while. Yeah. The Tough Guys scene could have easily been cut out of this movie. It's absolutely no consequence.
Well, then there's this completely incoherent scene afterwards where Jane comes into the bad guy gym looking for Jeff Mata, and Kid Rock dude, and he's got these two dopey friends, are just weirdly standing around and, like, kind of dancing and talking and mumbling.
In the dark, like, in this dark gym.
Yeah.
All talking at the same time. Nobody's saying anything that's coherent
at all. And I think one of them is carrying a knife, too. I could just be, like, making that up, but I'm pretty sure one of them's in the gym and just carrying a knife.
There's so many scenes in this movie where, like, as soon as they cut to a big group of people, everyone is always talking at the same time, and no one's really saying anything, though.
Yeah.
There's no words. It's just noise.
It's like the script didn't have dialogue. It was just like, hey, the bad guys talk about their plan or something, you know? Yeah. So this is when, I think when I watched it, I didn't realize what the context was, but they have a big karate fight at that same industrial area.
Yeah. Right.
And at some point, I guess that is when your buddy from the guitar demonstration, he got kidnapped at some point, which I don't know if they make a big deal out of when he got kidnapped. I don't remember.
You know, you're skipping over a huge plot point.
Oh,
I think
that?
When Jeff Mata gets killed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's during this fight.
That's during this fight. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but at some point, like, I don't know when that dude got kidnapped. Like, I feel like I would have remembered that.
Yeah. It was pretty quick and fleeting, and they sort of carry him away. I mean, the main part of that scene was, like, you know, the Shakespearean sort of Jeff Mata's dead. You know, there's this love connection going on between the two other main characters.
The death is great because it is a really good, hilarious, like, fall off of a...
It's a great fall, and it's so inconsequential.
Yeah.
Like, they're having their, like, meeting of the Dragon Sound friends, like, in front of their house the next day. And he's like, I'm really sorry I killed my brother. And then, you know, the chick whose name I forget is just like, oh, it's okay. Like, just...
murdering
like
my
it
brother.
It was totally, like, not a big deal.
Also, it was funny to me that, like, this movie's all about Taekwondo, and he like, falls 10 feet to his death.
Yeah.
Like, why
not
have a cool Taekwondo death? I don't know.
Nope. Falls to his death, and then cut to the dude that was talking about his father. He does get a letter in the mail, and so he finds out he's somehow contacted his father. He's coming. They're going to meet at some point here.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone says, oh, hey, we're going to pitch in and get you a suit or something.
So you can meet
your father. And then there's this weird suburb fight that happens for no reason between...
And I'll refer to that subplot as the Pretty in Pink subplot.
Get him... Yeah. So they're in the suburbs for some reason. And Michael Phelps is suddenly like fucking Ryu from Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah.
Because he gets a sword. He like tears his shirt off. Mm-hmm. And we've seen this guy do nothing cool in the entire movie. Yeah, he's just been a dopey guy who's bad at kissing.
There was that sparring session where they all had really dirty feet.
Yeah, but like, it's just him, like, he's always on the defense against YK Kim, and it's just him getting fists in his mouth or whatever. Like, he's not, like, doing anything cool.
Yeah, no. He pretty much just gets fisted in the mouth for this movie.
Yes. Until the end.
Tearing
his shirt off and being awesome.
They couldn't tell who Michael Phelps was supposed to be in the movie. He started off as kind of the comic relief, like, when he's outside the college classroom and, like, doing, like, weird, goofy gestures at the girl.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah.
And then they must have realized, okay, this guy isn't funny, so let's try another angle with him.
Yeah.
He became the heartthrob. They had that making out scene where it was very uncomfortable, and they're like, well, this isn't working out. He's got to be the Rambo-esque
Yeah, you know, right. Because that's what we call a character arc. I'm a film studies major.
Yeah, okay,
so
yeah,
through
yeah.
a full
the
arc,
character
you know.
Arc. Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
I think it was around this time, Dan, where you and I made the really good choice to speed this movie up to 1.5 speed.
So, 1. Yeah. Well, we've never done this ever before because mm-hmm. you know, even stuff we don't like or whatever, it's always like, okay, we got to give this a shot.
Right.
The whole point of this podcast is like we're gonna watch stuff that mm-hmm. you know might be really bad.
Yeah.
But this one we realized because like YouTube has the playback speed thing,
yeah,
and
yeah.
so we haven't had that option with anything else because we're usually Netflix or Hulu or right. Amazon or something. But this entire movie is on YouTube, by the yeah. way. I probably should have said that if you guys want to watch this at home. It's on YouTube. I think it's also on Vudu or whatever. It's
highly recommended.
Yes, yeah, very easy to find. But yeah, we were at the very end, and it was just so bad that like I realized we could just do 1.25 mm-hmm. speed here. And it's like just enough where we can still hear all the dialogue, where it's not fast forward, but if we can just shave off like 3 minutes of this time.
We jumped to 1.5 speed, though.
At some point by the end.
And
I
really think the movie benefited from it because the fight scenes were so much more frenetic.
It was better. It seems like it's shot like more. It's like a Private Ryan, like it's a jerky cam.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was pretty good. But then the ninjas, the bad ninja guys who got really no like character development at all, the boss ninja chops off his subordinate's head and then does this like evil laugh thing. But there's the sun is right behind him and like a giant lens flare is taking up like 40% of the screen during this like
the
giant...
whole shot was just ruined and they stuck it. Strong and wrong. That's the philosophy of this movie.
This movie is all first takes, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
the stuff that they left in the movie, there's no way they did other takes. There's just no way.
If you're not doing a take two on that guy jumping in the convertible, everything's out the window,
yeah.
I think.
Right.
We are all Orpons. He says that. And that's in there.
They kept it.
That's in the most emotional scene in the movie. We are all Orpons. My father is Black American?
Yeah, that was
who says
classic.
That? That's like so un-PC. Not, but also just so cringy. That's in this movie. If you think they did a second take.
Well, it does pay off with the feel-good ending here.
Yes.
Because he does meet his father.
Which
well, he
is
gets...
just a 20-year-old boy with spray paint
yeah.
on.
Yeah, that's the best part of this to me. The big reveal of the father who's younger than him. Who's obviously, like, not to draw conclusions about YK Kim, but they were just obviously... Does anyone know an African-American actor who could be in this movie?
Right, right.
Someone came up who happened to be 20 years younger, and they're just like, that's okay, we'll just dye his hair gray, it'll be fine.
They probably just spray painted
Yeah, we're gonna go to Home Depot and get some spray paint.
And he's so obviously like a 16-year-old kid with a spray-painted head.
So yeah, he shows up, he's the dad, and yeah, because at some point the son got fucked up in the fight or whatever.
Yeah, he's in the hospital.
Yeah, and so they reconcile, and then we fade to a only through the elimination of violence can we achieve world peace title screen.
It was the most violent movie of all time.
It's nothing but karate fighting.
Yeah, it's nothing but fighting and cutting off limbs.
And it's not even like they were practicing like judo or like a self-defense based thing. It's all just like kicking people in the face and like knife fighting and
grabbing
stuff.
Yeah. People with your feet. And,
and also like blatantly sexually harassing women.
Yes.
Like,
these aren't these like pious monks the whole time.
They're
just rock and roll band. It's like,
they're lame and unlikable.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, Tom, it was a hell of a recommendation.
Yeah.
I will say though, after all that, I legitimately enjoy this movie.
Yeah.
Really could watch it anytime, and I just love it. I love the songs. I know all the words to the songs.
Uh-huh.
I have a Dragon Sound shirt.
Nice.
Oh, awesome.
Well, I found out that one of the songs. Did you ever play Far Cry Blood Dragon?
I never have.
So it's pretty cool. It's so you know the Far Cry series is usually this kind of like serious open world thing, but they made an offshoot called Blood Dragon, which is like a shorter like thing you can download, and it's very much like you got Michael Biehn from the Terminator to like voice the main guy, very 80s,
dude.
It's all like you know that neon drenched kind of synthwave type thing.
Yeah.
But the end credit song is the friendship, loyalty, honesty. Like they use that
amazing.
As the end credits.
That's amazing.
And the poster for it was inspired by Miami Connection.
Man, we sing the friendship loyalty song. All the time. That's like a big bit that we do.
Like, in concert you've done that?
Not in concert, but just in our general
day
to day.
Yeah.
We got Ben from Thank You Scientists over here.
Yeah, he can attest to that. It's absolutely become a staple, and there's so many jokes in this movie that are just incredible. To me, it's even more enjoyable than The Room, which is like kind of like, you know, the big bad movie that everybody likes,
right.
But this movie is just so good.
It's definitely more entertaining, and in the pantheon of bad movies, this one definitely made me feel really good watching it.
And it is very much a time capsule of the era. And like,
for sure.
Oh, yeah. And like, you know, I saw, like, Kung Fury after this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just like, it's got that winky thing.
That, I hated
like, just that. Yeah. And I'm like, man, like, just watch Miami Connection.
Yeah, the real thing exists.
The real thing exists.
Right,
yeah.
right.
The real thing is out there.
Well, that'll be it for Miami Connection. And as always, we want to thank anyone who supports Panning the Stream. Mm-hmm. We do a listener support feature. If you go to panningthestream.com, if you want to help us out, keep the lights on at $1, $5, or $10 a month, you can help us out. And for everyone, for every new supporter we get, mm-hmm. we always guarantee that they're going to get a Bonku. Mm-hmm. And Bonk, do we have a new supporter this week?
We sure do. Actually, this one is for Jabril. This Bonku's for Jabril, who had supported us previously. I guess he got a little tired of it, but then decided to support us again.
And that's totally fine.
We're very grateful for that.
Come and go as much as you please.
Jabril, here's your Bonku. The sunlight fell in through a crack in the window. Jabril stood silent.
That's very good.
Thank you.
There you go, Jabril.
Maybe that was when he was contemplating supporting the podcast again.
That was the turning point for him.
And if you have any feedback or recommendations, you know, we listen to recommendations, obviously. Miami Connection. A lot of the stuff that we've done on this show is from recommendations. You can let us know at Pan the Stream on Twitter. You can also find out what we're going to be doing the next week if you follow us. And we're also at panningthestream@gmail.com if you have anything you want to say to us. But this is the part where we usually also thank you, Tom Onda.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for sitting through this movie. You might have not enjoyed it as much as I do. But
I thought it was a hell of a watch. Tom, let's go into the plug zone here. Is there thank you, scientist.
Sounds like you were coming on to me.
That we call the plug zone?
Yeah.
I don't really say the plug zone a lot.
Too romantic, but all right. Whatever.
Don't say that.
So, all right. So, Tom, you've got an album that just came out.
I just put out an album called Terraformer
with
Thank You, Scientist. And, if you like weird music, you might like it. It's on all streaming platforms and, just about everywhere where you could buy music, you can find it.
Your Spotify's near YouTube.
All that stuff.
It's 84 minutes of music.
It's a lot. It's a real life double album.
It is. And it's so, like, obviously I told you I got the record, but I don't have a record player. So I've just been listening to it on Spotify.
Yeah.
And I could totally see how, the two halves of the album kind of lend themselves to being a double LP.
And everything kind of flows into the next thing.
Yeah. It's such an incredible album. I was telling Dan, even if you weren't my brother, I'd be obsessed with it. It's so good.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's excellent.
It's been fascinating for me to hear because, like, I grew up with a pretty narrow, my dad basically said that if it wasn't classic rock, rock is not even actually music.
I definitely got, like, a classic rock vibe from your dad. Like, he listens to Skinner and
he is
Molly Hatchet or something.
100%, yes. Yeah. And so, even me, with my very limited scope of knowledge of music and everything, I listened to the album, listened to it a couple times now, mm-hmm. and it's just so obvious that all you guys are so tremendously talented at what you do. Catchy, great stuff. So definitely check it out any streaming platform there. But thank you to Bonk. Thank you to Tom.
Yeah, thanks again for having me.
Of course, thanks for everyone listening. We will be back next week with more Panning the Stream.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.